Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the Golden Age of Radio. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. In this hour of mystery, later on, we hear Sherlock Holmes with The Adventure of the Dying Detective. Right now, it's Bulldog Drummond with Ned Weaver and Miss Mercedes McCambridge in the case of the Atomic Murders, heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on January 17, 1947.
Adventures comes Bulldog Drummond. The Mutual Broadcasting System brings you another exciting detective adventure with Bulldog Drummond, starring Ned Weaver. Champion of justice, amateur detective, celebrated soldier of fortune of screen and radio, Bulldog Drummond comes to you every week at this same time with more of his baffling and intriguing mysteries. For adventure and excitement, keep this rendezvous with Bulldog Drummond every week. And now, to tell us of his latest adventure, here is Bulldog Drummond.
When you're in my type of business, you must reconcile yourself to one thing: unpopularity. The people on the other side of the fence avoid you like the plague. For example, last Friday, Denny and I dropped into Larry's for a late evening snack. Larry's is one of those intimate little spots on West 47th Street with the usual assortment of cartoon caricatures on the walls and the usual assortment of shady characters at the tables. The place was crowded, but the cheering section was conspicuously silent as Denny and I squeezed our way toward a booth in the rear.
Look, sir, that booth isn't vacant after all. Someone's sitting there.
So I see. Roxy Hagen.
Hagen? Friend of yours, Captain Drummond?
Not exactly a friend, Denny. A professional acquaintance, you might say. Roxy and I both deal in crime, but from opposite approaches. You can easily size up our relationship by the unwelcome glance he's giving me.
But look, sir, he's leaving the booth.
Well, come on, let's get it before someone else does.
Right. Well, this is a bit of luck, and I'm famished.
And I wonder why Roxy left so hurriedly.
Well, obviously, he was finished.
No, on the contrary. Look here, his glass. He hasn't touched his drink.
Oh.
You know, Denny, I think I frightened Roxy off.
Well, that's one way of getting a seat in a crowded restaurant, eh, sir? Oh, here's a menu.
I see you didn't touch your drink.
What's that?
I said I see you didn't touch your drink.
What business is that of yours? And if you must know, that drink
Who's he?
Oh, Denny.
You were supposed to be alone.
He's usually with me.
Well, if you say he's all right.
He's all right.
Move over, you.
Now, look here, I
said over.
But I...
Over, Denny.
Yes, sir.
Let's get down to business.
A good idea.
I got it with me.
You see, Denny, he's got it with him.
Oh, he has? Oh, that's fine. Hey, what am I talking about?
And what's the matter with him?
He's the confused type.
Well, tell him to shut up.
Well, of all of...
Shut up, Denny.
Yes, sir.
Now, here's the ticket. You hold it until I tell you where and when to deliver. Is that clear?
Quite clear.
All right. Now, your telephone number.
Elwood 8, 9970.
Elwood 89970. Here's the envelope. Al said that was the deal.
If Al said that's what it was, that's what it is.
Now wait for my call.
I'll be waiting.
You'll be hearing from me.
Well, sir, would you mind telling me what this is all about?
Denny, I wish I knew.
Huh? You don't know the man?
Never saw him before in my life.
But he gave you that ticket.
Yes, I'm afraid it's a case of mistaken identity.
Oh? What kind of a ticket is it?
Obviously, it's a parcel claim check of some sort. And he wants to ensure its safekeeping.
Well, what are we going to do about it?
We're going home and wait for our mysterious visitor's call.
Oh, but How do you know he'll call?
Oh, there's no doubt about that. He'll call, all right.
What makes you so sure?
Because, Denny, he's made a sizable investment in us.
In us?
Hmm. Look for yourself in this envelope. There's a $1,000 bill.
You know, sir, it just occurred to me.
What, Denny?
Roxy Hagen. You said yourself we frightened him off at Larry's tonight. That claim check and the $1,000 bill were meant for him.
Undoubtedly.
Well, then why not look up Roxy and get to the bottom of this?
Because, Denny, I have an idea that Roxy will look us up in short order. We'll just sit and wait for developments. In this instance, we'll let the case come to us. Don't forget, we're holding the trump card. And it looks as if someone is about to make a bid. Hello?
Hello, Elwood 89970.
Yes?
I'm calling about Steve.
Steve?
Yes, Steve Mantell, the man you met at Larry's.
Oh, yes.
Well, this is very important. He wants me to bring you to him.
And who are you?
Oh, I'm Rita Miller. I'm Steve's fiancée.
Very well, Miss Miller. Where shall we meet?
Well, you'd better come here to my apartment. It's 33 Grove Place, 3A. I'm afraid to leave this building.
Why? What's the matter?
A man has been following me since I left Steve. And for the past hour, he's been watching my apartment from the street.
Now, Miss Miller, about this man who's been following you.
He's still down there. Look for yourself.
Denny, the window.
Yes, sir.
Miss Miller, suppose you enlighten me about the parcel claim check.
Claim check? What claim check?
The one I'm holding for Steve Mantell.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
Captain Drummond.
Yes, Denny.
There is a man standing across the street.
I told you, he's the one.
There's nothing unusual about a man standing on a street corner, is there, sir?
Not necessarily.
He's wearing a tan hat and a brown coat.
Huh?
And he's carrying a black bag.
Well, Denny?
Oh, that's correct, sir. He's holding a black bag, all right.
Well, now do you believe me?
Who is he?
I don't know. Oh, please, Captain Drummond, Steve asked me to bring you to him as soon as possible, and he said to make sure that I'm not followed. But how will I get out of here?
Well, now, let's see. Denny.
Yes, sir?
Stand next to Miss Miller a moment, will you? Mm-hmm. That should do it.
Do what?
Go in the other room, Denny.
The other room? Why, sir?
To undress.
What?
Miss Miller is leaving this building with me, disguised as you.
Yeah, but, sir,
now, do as I tell you, Denny.
Very well, but really, sir, the things I go through for you...
Miller, it worked. We're not being followed.
Thank heavens. Now I can take this derby off.
Better leave it on, just in case.
Oh.
Which way?
It's Elm Street, 347. It's only a few blocks from here.
Miss Miller, what sort of business is your fiancé in?
Steve, he's a laboratory technician.
Where?
Well, he just came in from Chicago the day before yesterday. He finished an assignment there.
I see. Chicago.
Uh-huh. After we're married, we expect to go back to Chicago. As soon as Steve completes some work here.
What kind of work?
Well, I don't know, really. Steve just said it was very important to him.
And profitable?
What do you mean by that?
Nothing.
Well, Captain Drummond, you've got to tell me what it's all about.
Frankly, Miss Miller, I'm as much in the dark as you are. But I'm sure Steve Mantell can enlighten the both of us. What number did you say?
347. It's that brownstone next to the apartment house there. Yes, this is it. There. Just down these stairs. He has a basement apartment. Here we are. Gee, that's strange.
What is?
The lights are out. Steve said he'd be waiting. He wouldn't have gone to bed.
I'll ring again.
Steve! Steve! Captain Drummond, maybe something's happened to him.
Yeah?
Steve, I've been...
Yeah, what is it?
Captain Drummond, this isn't Steve.
Hey, what do you two want?
We're looking for Steve Mantell.
You got the wrong place. You don't live here.
This is Steve's apartment.
What do you two think you're doing? You're getting me out of bed in the middle of the night to play games?
Steve lives here. I saw him here only a few hours ago.
Is that dame crazy?
Believe me, Captain Drummond, that's the truth.
Look at the get-up on her. Don't you know, girlie, you can get picked up for imitating a man?
Now, just a moment.
Now, listen, you two. You ring that bell again, and I call the cops. Now go on, beat it.
Oh, I...
Well, Miss Miller?
Oh, Captain Drummond, this is a trick of some kind. Steve was here a few hours ago. This is his place. Believe me, it is. I know, the mailbox. That's it. The mailbox over there. Steve's name is on it. Look, you can...
Evidently, there must be some mistake, Miss Miller. The name on this card is James Burton. Now, try to get some rest, Miss Miller.
But where can Steve be?
That's what we're going to try to find out. Denny?
Yes, I'm ready, sir.
All right, let's get started. I'll call you, Miss Miller, just as soon as I have a lead. Come on, Denny. What about the man with the black bag who was keeping a watch in this building?
Oh, he left a few moments after you departed with Miss Miller. By the way, sir, where are you going to stop to look for Steve Mantell?
At 347 Elm Street.
But you said it looked as if Mantell didn't live there.
It only looked that way, Denny.
What do you mean?
The man in pajamas who answered the door.
What about him?
He said we awakened him. I looked him over quite carefully.
And?
Well, it isn't customary, Denny, for a man who wears pajamas to sleep with socks and shoes on.
No answer, sir. Shall I try it again?
No, we'll use the skeleton key.
But what if he's inside?
We'll take that chance. Ah, there it is. See if you can find the light switch.
Yes, sir. Oh, I have it, sir.
Well.
My word, what a mess. Looks as if a cyclone hit the place.
See what's in the next room, Denny.
Yes, sir.
Oh, Denny.
Yes?
Never mind that next room.
Did you find something?
Yes, what we came for. Behind this couch. There he is, Steve Mantell.
Dead?
Yes, Denny. Very dead.
Oh, I've searched everywhere, sir. I found nothing. Anything in his pockets?
Empty, every one of them.
Whoever killed Steve Mantell certainly went over this apartment with a fine-tooth comb.
But they overlooked one thing, Denny.
Yes, what's that?
This label on the inside of his coat pocket. Here, look.
Baum Brothers Clothers, Chicago, Illinois. November 16th, 1946.
And the name of the wearer here.
Edward Torrey. Edward Torrey? But his name is Steve Mantell.
Evidently not in Chicago.
What do you mean, sir?
I mean that Steve Mantell found it convenient to use two names. Well, come on, there's nothing more we can do here. First, we're stopping off at the nearest telegraph office to send a wire to Chicago.
To whom in Chicago?
The police. I have an idea they'll be able to supply me with an account of the activities of one Edward Torrey, alias Steve Mantell. And then, Denny, from the telegraph office, we're going straight home.
But why home?
Oh, just to see which way the wind's been blowing there.
Look at our place.
As you said about Steve Mantell's apartment, it looks as if a cyclone had hit it. Probably the same one.
Oh, so that's what you meant about coming home to see which way the wind was blowing.
That's what I meant.
Then you expected to find our apartment this way.
I did, Denny. Someone had an idea that the claim check would be here.
Boxy Hagen. He's the one, sir. He knew Mantell gave you the ticket. You yourself said he would look us up. He was here, and he killed Mantell.
I don't doubt that Roxy was here, Denny, but as for Mantell's murderer, I'd elect the man in the pajamas as the most likely suspect.
Well, just the same, sir. I think it's about time we had Roxy taken in by the police.
Not at all. Roxy will be of much more value to us on the loose, at least for the time being. At present, my main concern is the claim check.
Whatever parcel it's redeemable for must certainly be of great value.
It certainly must. Mantell gave us a $1,000 bill to guarantee the check's safekeeping. He saved the check, but not himself. There's no mistake, he was murdered because of it.
Yes, and our place here turned topsy-turvy in the search for it. Well, anyway, there's comfort in knowing that you have it with you. Now we can find out what makes it so valuable.
I haven't it with me, Denny.
What? You left it here?
No, I mailed it.
You mailed it?
While you were waiting outside the telegraph office. It'll arrive here safe and sound in the first mail tomorrow morning.
I can't believe it. Steve isn't dead.
Yes, Miss Miller, Steve Mantell was murdered.
Why? Steve never did anything wrong to anybody. Why would anybody want to kill him?
Miss Miller, I have an idea that Steve Mantell wasn't everything you thought he was.
What do you mean by that?
I'm not sure, but I should know by morning.
What are you talking about?
I expect a wire from the Chicago police in answer to an inquiry of mine concerning Steve Mantell. And, in addition, an important envelope will arrive by the first mail.
No, Captain Drummond, you're wrong. I know you're wrong. Steve wouldn't...
Captain Drummond.
Yes, Denny?
The man with the black bag. I just saw him from the window. Got out of an auto downstairs. He's standing on the corner again.
All right. Miss Miller.
Yes?
I want you to remain here in your apartment. I'll call you in the morning. Come along, Denny. It's about time we had a talk with that man with the black bag.
Yes, there he is, sir. Standing near the street lamp.
Stay in the shadows along the building. Have your revolver ready.
It's ready right now, sir. Look, he's walking away.
He must have seen us coming. Hurry.
But he's walking faster. He's making for his car.
Quickly, before...
Down, Denny.
We'll crawl over behind those stairs. The man with the bag. Look at him, Denny.
Why, he's falling over.
Come on. Come on, those shots were meant for him, not us.
Well, sir?
He's dead. Get that black bag. It's over near the curb there.
You're right. Yes, here it is, sir.
Look at this. His identification card.
Robert Matthews. Benson Investigation Bureau, Chicago, Illinois. Well, a private detective.
Now let me see the bag.
Yes, here you are, sir. An odd-looking box. Those dials. It looks like some sort of a radio. A shortwave set of some kind.
It picks up waves, Denny, but not sound waves.
Yes, but what kind is it?
A Geiger counter. It's used to detect and measure the presence of radioactivity in the atmosphere.
Oh, yes, I remember now. The atomic bomb. I remember seeing it in the newsreels. It was used in the atomic bomb test.
That's right.
Oh, sir, the atomic bomb. The parcel claim check. Must be for a package that contains an atomic bomb.
Denny.
Heaven, sir, here we are.
Easy, Denny. I'm sure an atomic bomb isn't involved in this. You can rest assured the city's peace will be undisturbed. As for us, we'll just have to wait for the claim check in the mail. In the meantime, let's hope nothing blows up in our faces.
Oh, dear, of all the mornings for the mail to be late, this above all days.
Don't worry, Denny. It'll be along any minute.
Yes, hello.
Captain Hugh Drummond.
Who's calling?
This is Western Union, a telegram from Chicago for Captain Drummond.
Oh, just a moment. Captain Drummond, the wire from Chicago is here.
Oh, give me the phone. Captain Drummond speaking.
A wire from police headquarters, Chicago.
Yes, go ahead, read it.
Regarding your inquiry concerning Edward Torrey. Subject is wanted for questioning in connection with theft of $100,000 worth of radium from Chicago office of Crystal Laboratories. Case in addition to police in hands of Benson Investigation Bureau. Signed, Inspector C.F. Bradley.
Thank you very much. Well, Denny, you can rest easier. It's definitely not an atomic bomb. Radium.
Radium?
$100,000 worth, to be exact, stolen from a laboratory in Chicago. Pieces begin to fit together. Robert Matthews of the Benson Investigation Bureau was trying to track down that stolen radium. That's why he was killed.
Mantell stole the radium?
Mantell, under the name of Edward Torrey.
But, sir, why was Matthews carrying the Geiger counter?
Well, Denny, radium, too, sends off radioactive elements.
That must be the mail at last.
I'll get it. Yes?
Hello, Drummond.
Well... The gentleman of the pajamas. I hardly recognized you without your nocturnal getup.
Yeah. But you recognize this, don't you?
Offhand, I'd say that's a revolver.
You win the $64.
Captain Drummond, did the envelope come a... Oh, dear.
All right. Back up, both of you.
We have a visitor, Denny.
Not for long. Oh, by the way, Drummond, the mailman won't be here this morning. Your mail was picked up for you.
Don't you know it's impolite to read other people's mail?
Funny man.
It's also illegal.
You too, huh? Turn around, funny men. I sit around. This ain't a dime store toy. Now around. Face that wall, that's it. both you funny men cracked your last joke.
Oh. Captain Drummond.
Yes, Denny.
You all right?
So far. Denny, look behind us.
Why, it's he.
Yes, and as dead as he would have had us.
But where did the shot come from?
There's no time to investigate now. Get the Geiger counter and hurry.
Yes, sir.
We're going radium hunting.
But where are we going to look? We don't have the claim check.
I remember the number. It was 862.
Oh, but what good's the number? We don't even know where the parcel is stored.
Denny, if you came from Chicago by train and you wanted to check a parcel immediately upon arrival, where would you do it?
Why, at Grand Central Station, of course.
That's where we begin. Grand Central Station. We'll enter the station from the West Plaza, Denny. That's nearest the parcel checking room.
Yes, sir. Well, what's that?
The Geiger counter. Listen to it.
Well, it's ticking faster.
The nearer we get to the station, the more active it becomes. The radium must be in the parcel room.
Parcel 862, you say?
That's right, 862. I want to see it immediately.
Sorry, 862 was checked out just a few minutes ago.
Get going, Denny. The package was picked up just before I got there.
Yeah, right, sir. You know, sir, I thought something was strange. Just as you went into the station, the counter trailed off and then stopped completely.
Cut across town, Denny. We'll avoid the heavy traffic.
Yes, where are we going?
We're paying a long-delayed call on Roxy Hagen.
But why Roxy now?
Because the parcel room attendant's description of the man who picked up the package fits Roxy to a T.
The counter's starting up. We're on the right trail again.
Yes, and we're getting nearer to Roxy's place.
Oh, this elevator is so slow, we could have walked up faster.
We'll be there in a second.
Captain Drummond.
Sounded as if it came from above. This way, Denny.
Right.
Apartment 6-3. Here it is. The door's locked. Come on, we're breaking it in. Ready?
I'm ready.
It's giving. Once more.
That's it. But look, sir, the window's open. He must have gone down the fire escape.
No, Denny. Look. Over there on the floor.
Oh. It's Roxy.
Yes. And it looks as if we won't have that talk with him after all.
Captain Drummond.
Miss Miller.
Come in.
Go ahead, Denny. We were going to call on you sooner, but we were busy clearing up the case.
You mean you found out who killed Steve?
Well, let's say we found out who was responsible for his death.
But you, Miss Miller, can undoubtedly tell us who the actual murderer was.
I? What are you talking about?
Was it Roxy?
Roxy?
Or was it the gentleman of the pajamas?
Or did you do that one yourself, too?
Captain Drummond, I demand to know what you mean.
Rather a good actress, too, in addition to her other talents, aren't any?
Oh, I don't know, sir. I would say her performance is a bit too studied, deliberate.
I don't know what you two are driving at, or what ideas you have, but I'm sure that the police will settle this.
You know, Miss Miller, I thought the same thing. That's why I took the liberty of calling them. They should arrive shortly. But in the meantime, you might turn the radium over to us.
Radium?
Yes, I'd feel much better if it were in our hands.
Radium?
Denny, you might demonstrate our little gadget.
With pleasure, sir.
Now, Miss Miller, here's a little item that no household should be without, especially if a radium thief should be lurking about. All right, Denny, switch it on. Interesting item, isn't it, Miss Miller? No? That's enough, Denny.
Well? What have you proven, Captain Drummond?
Oh, now really, Miss Miller, for a person with such a keen interest in radium, I'm surprised at your ignorance concerning our little telltale mechanism. By elimination, it led us directly here to the radium and to you. And speaking of elimination, you appear to excel at it, too.
Yes?
Yes. Please stop me if I'm incorrect. You had a neat plan worked out. You put a scare into your fiancé to get the claim check out of his hands. Steve Mantell was murdered. You led to his apartment on a ruse while you had Roxy go through my place for the claim check. When I dropped the hint to you that I was expecting an important envelope in the mail, you realized it was really time to get down to business. The man with a black bag was getting too close for comfort. So you had him written off. And then I imagine you played off Roxy and your other cohort against each other. But even a two-way split between you and Roxy was unsatisfactory. So Roxy had to go. And that left just you and $100,000 worth of radium. Am I wrong?
Well, I would take Miss Miller's silence to mean that you're quite correct, sir.
Yes, Denny. Miss Miller had a good plan, but it didn't work. And if Miss Miller thinks her plan was good, wait until she hears the one the state will have laid out for her. And in cases like hers, the state's plans always work.
And so, into the night walks Bulldog Drummond, seeking new adventure and excitement. Join us next week at the same time when we'll bring you Bulldog Drummond, starring Ned Weaver, in another thrilling story. Tonight's adventure was written by Edward J. Adamson. Arthur Van Horn speaking. This is the Mutual Broadcasting System.
Bulldog Drummond, on Tuned to Yesterday from January 17, 1947, on the Mutual Broadcasting System, part of their Friday night lineup at 9:30. It's an hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levanier, and now we move on to The Adventure of the Dying Detective, penned by Sir Arthur Conan Doyle in 1913 and adapted anew in this episode featuring John Gielgud and Ralph Richardson. An NBC broadcast of Sherlock Holmes, next from February 13th, 1955.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, the original and immortal stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, dramatized anew with Sir Ralph Richardson as Dr. Watson, and Sir John Gielgud in the role of Sherlock Holmes.
If you would start with a chassis that's new, all new, like you get in the new kind of Ford, and put on this chassis a body all new, like you get in the new kind of Ford, if you would give this package new length and new strength, like you get in the new kind of Ford, you would assemble the greatest advance of the year. That's what you get in the new kind of Ford.
So watch the forest going by and you'll say, you're ahead in a Ford all the way.
And now, the adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, Dr. Watson, he's dying. He's Mr. Holmes, sir. He won't last through another day. What shall I do, Doctor? Oh, heaven help him. Mr. Holmes is dying.
I'll never forget that terrible November day in 89. I was in practice in Paddington, and Mrs. Hudson, our old Baker Street landlady, somehow made her way to my room through the fog with that dreadful message. I was horrified. I'd heard nothing of Sherlock Holmes' illness. I'd seen little enough of the man himself for some time. But I need hardly say that when I'd calmed Mrs. Hudson as best I could, I snatched my coat and hat, and I rushed out with her to a hansom. Oh, Mrs. Hudson, I really must beg you. The thing's worrying enough without tears.
Oh, I can't help it, Doctor, honest. I'm that upset. He's been so good to me always.
Yes, yes, I know. I'm sorry. How long has he been like this, so ill?
3 days it's been. Sinking fast, sir. Oh, it's pitiful to see him lying there.
But why on earth didn't you tell me before? At least you could have got some kind of medical help for him.
Let me. You know how masterful he is. I couldn't bear it any more when I saw him lying there this afternoon. Them bones sticking out of his face and his great bright eyes staring at me. Oh, he'll never get out of his bed again, Doctor.
Oh, pray heaven I can do something to prevent that, Mrs. Hudson.
I told him I wouldn't bide another minute. Now, I was going to fetch a doctor with his leave or without, I said. And he said, let it be Dr. Watson, then, he said. So I come, sir.
Thank heaven. What have you been doing lately? Do you know?
Oh, I never do, sir. But he did say something about a case down at Rothereye.
The river and this fog. He's picked up some infection.
That's my beauty. We've nearly done it, sir. There's 221B Baker Street.
Heaven bless you.
Holmes. Great hells. Holmes.
Well, Watson. Back to the old haunt again, I see. You never could escape from Baker Street for long. But we've fallen on evil days, you see.
My dear fellow.
No, Watson, keep back. Come one step nearer. I shall order you out of the house.
But you're sick to death, Holmes. I'm a doctor.
Do what I say, Watson. Stay where you are.
You're in a fever. Mrs. Hudson was right. I've never seen such a brightness in man's eyes.
Yes, and this foul crust on my lips. And my bones almost breaking through the skin. Oh, don't think I haven't seen it, Watson. Don't think I haven't kept staring into the mirror these last 3 days. Just waiting.
Waiting?
For confirmation. What I've suspected from the start.
Well, now let me...
No, don't be angry with me, Watson. You're a good fellow, but it's for your own sake, and you must keep your distance. Don't come near me.
My sake? Holmes, you're delirious.
Am I? But I know, you see. I know what's the matter. It's a coolie disease from Sumatra, Watson. The Dutch know more about it than we do, but even they've hardly made much of it. It's deadly. And horribly contagious.
Good heavens, Holmes. Do you suppose that'll hinder me? It's my job, man. I'd go near a stranger in such circumstances, let alone an old friend.
Stay where you are, I say. Do I have to ask again? Sit there and I'll go on talking. Otherwise, you'll have to leave me alone to die in peace.
Now, Holmes, I warn you. You can be master elsewhere, but at least I'm master in the sick room. Now, I'm going to examine your symptoms and treat you for them.
Now then, very well, Watson, I must say it. If I am to have a doctor, I must at least have a man in whom I have some confidence.
You've none in me, then?
Oh, in your friendship, of course. We've been through so much together. I know you're worth, man, but... Well, facts are facts. And your experience is very limited. And your qualifications, rather mediocre, Watson.
I see.
Do you think I wanted to say that, old friend? I hated to do it, but I had to. Forgive me.
Yes, yes, of course. Well, if you've no confidence in me, after all we've been to each other, I won't intrude my services for a moment.
Oh, Watson, Watson.
Yes, but at least you'll permit me to bring someone else, then. I can't sit here and watch you die, even if you have hurt me so abominably. I've suddenly remembered. Aintree's in London. He's the greatest living authority on tropical disease. I'm going to fetch him, Holmes, this instant.
Watson! Stay where you are! I'm not dead yet, and you won't pass this door while I've strength to stand up in front of it.
Great heavens, Holmes!
There, you see? It's locked, and you won't get this key from me by force, Watson. I've got you, my friend.
Holmes, this is insanity.
Is it? Those are the final symptoms, I believe. Stand over there, little... Is there by the table? Let me pass round you to get back to bed. Oh, Lord, the pain.
Elise, let me give you some water.
My dad, I can reach it if I want it. You shall have your way, Watson, if you'll just have patience. Only give me a moment to get my strength.
I seem to have no choice.
I'll let you go, Watson. Yes. In a quarter of an hour, I'll let you go. But you'll seek help only from the man I choose.
As long
as
I can. As long as I can bring someone.
Yeah, you shall, I promise. There's only one thing. Just one thing, old friend.
Well, what is it? I'll do anything.
Have you any change in your pocket?
Change? Well, I think so, yes.
Any silver?
Yes, a good deal.
How many half-crowns?
Half-crowns?
Yeah, quickly, count them, Watson.
Why, well, five.
Too few.
Too few for what?
But we must do what we can. Quickly, put them all into your watch pocket, Watson. And all the rest of your money in your left trouser pocket. Thank you. It'll balance you so much better, you see.
Delirium.
Yeah, but I think you want it... Wanted to go now that your silver balance is...
Anywhere to get help for you.
Yeah.
I can't bear to see you like this, Holmes.
Very well. It's time now. You can go and fetch Mr. Culverton Smith to me. Number 13, Lower Burke Street.
Culverton Smith? I've never heard the name.
No doubt. It may surprise you that the one man on earth who really knows about this disease isn't a medical man at all, but a planter. He's a well-known resident of Sumatra, home on leave.
I'll go at once if you'll give me the key.
Yes, stay there. I'll throw it under the table. Oh, there's only one thing more. Watson, one more.
What is it?
You may have to plead with him to come.
To plead?
Yes, there's no good feeling between us. His nephew, a young fellow called Victor Savage, he died recently. I suspected foul play, and I let Culbert and Smith see that I suspected so that the fellow has a grudge against him. But you'll beg him, Watson, implore him. Get him here by any means. He's the only man in all the world who can save me.
I'll bring him if I have to carry him.
Nothing of the sort. Persuade him to come, but come back yourself first. Yes, make any excuse so as to reach me before he dies. You won't fail me, Watson.
I never did, I think.
No. Oh, bless you, Watson, never. Here's the key. 13 Lower Burke Street. Culbert and Smith. Yeah, you and I, Watson, have done our part. But the world might still be overrun by oysters. All our gaslit, foggy, wondrous world.
In a moment, we continue this week's story in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
Robert Hall saves you more, shop and see. You pay less, you get more, shop and see.
Just compare the clothing values for your family.
Robert Hall beats them all, shop and see.
For you men who want quality suits at a low price, Robert Hall has all wool flannels at only $31.95. Compare nationally famous Robert Hall all-wool flannels with suits that cost many dollars more. Compare them for top-flight tailoring and style. And when you do, when you see the tremendous Robert Hall selection of shades and newest styles, you'll agree that these Robert Hall all-wool flannels are America's greatest suit value. Only $31.95, including alterations. Robert Hall, America's largest family clothing store.
And now we continue the adventures of Sherlock Holmes.
So, with a heavy heart, shocked at the wreck of that magnificent intellect, I left him babbling like a foolish child. The fog had lifted a little, but progress through the gas-lit streets was still delayed. I found my destination at last, 13 Lower Burke Street. And feeling desperate, I forced my way in past the manservant who opened the door. I found myself in a dark hall, confronting the figure of a man, very small and twisted in the shoulders and back, but with a skull of enormous capacity and a face coarse-grained and strangely yellow. Mr. Culverton Smith. Mr. Culverton Smith.
What is the meaning of this intrusion?
I'm sorry, but the matter simply can't be delayed. My friend, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
What? Holmes? You've come from Sherlock Holmes?
This instant. My name's Watson.
What about Holmes? How is he?
Desperately ill. That's why I've come.
So? I'm sorry to hear it. Do sit down, Mr. Watson.
Doctor.
Indeed. A professional in my own amateur line, then. And Mr. Holmes has his enemies, too. In crime, of course, where ours are among the microbes.
It's on account of your special knowledge that Mr. Holmes wanted to see you, Mr. Smith. He's a high opinion of your skill in Eastern diseases.
Indeed. I'll confess the subject is a particular hobby of mine. But, why did Mr. Sherlock Holmes fancy this disease of his was Eastern?
He's been working on a case among some Chinese sailors down by the docks.
Ah, that's it, is it? Well, we must trust that the matter isn't as grave as you suppose. How long has he been ill?
3 days.
Is he delirious?
I'm afraid so, quite severely.
It sounds serious enough, then. I'll come with you at once.
Oh, thank you, but I'm afraid I've another appointment, Mr. Smith. You'll find the street door ajar. His landlady may not be back. Now, I must hurry, Mr. Smith.
Oh, very well. I'll go alone, then. I know Mr. Holmes' address. You can rely on my being there within half an hour.
Thank you.
Good evening, Dr. Watson.
Good evening.
A very good evening to you, sir.
Thank you.
Who's that?
All right. All right.
Oh, Watson, that's good. Did you see him?
Yes. He's coming.
Admirable. You're the best of messengers, my dear Watson.
He wanted to come back with me.
Ah, that would never have done, Watson, would it?
But why?
Well, he asked what was wrong with me, of course.
Well, I told him about the Chinese in the East End.
Exactly. You've done all that a good friend could. I'm very much obliged. Well, now you must disappear from the scene entirely.
I must wait and hear his opinion, Holmes. You can't deny me that.
Oh, yeah, yes, of course you must. I wouldn't dream of depriving you of it. But he's such a curious fellow, Watson. I've reason to believe his opinion will be more valuable if he thinks that he and I are quite alone. I believe there's just room for you here. Here, behind the head of my bed, I think.
My dear Holmes.
Yes, there's no alternative, man. The old room doesn't lend it so much to concealment, does it? Quick, Watson, if you love me. Do you hear what I say? But there's a cab drawing up.
Well, I must say, Holmes, that if it weren't
for heaven's sake, quick, keep quiet. Don't speak. Don't move, whatever happens. Just listen, Watson. Listen with all your ears.
Well, if you say so, but this is really hardly dignified.
He's coming, man. Quiet now.
Oh. Holmes. Holmes. Can't you hear me, Holmes?
Smith, is that you? Oh, thank heaven, I hardly dare to hope you'll come.
I should imagine not indeed. And yet, I did, you see. Coals of fire, Mr. Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, it's very good of you, very noble of you. Oh. I appreciate your special knowledge.
You do, eh? Fortunately, you're the only man in London who does. Do you know what's the matter with you?
Yes, the same. I recognize the symptoms.
I shouldn't be surprised. And a bad lookout for you, if it is, eh, Holmes? Poor Victor was a dead man on the fourth day.
I knew you did it, Smith.
Oh, you did you? Only you couldn't prove it. So, you spread your rotten reports about me, and then you come crawling when you're in trouble yourself. What sort of game is that for the great Sherlock Holmes to play?
Let bygones be bygones, Smith. I'll forget it all. Only cure me and I'll forget it all.
Forget? What?
About Victor Savage's death. You're as good as admitted. Just now that you've done it, I'll forget it.
Can't you remember any unusual incident about the time your symptoms began?
Nothing. I'm too ill.
No. Didn't anything come by post, for instance? A box, by chance?
Smith, in mercy's name.
Holmes, you must hear me. An ivory box. It came on Wednesday.
Yes.
You opened it. Do you remember?
Yes. There was a sharp spring inside it. Some kind of joke.
A joke, eh? Wasn't any joke, as you find out to your cost.
I remember the spring. It drew blood. That box there on the table.
Ah, the very one, by George. And it may as well leave the room in my pocket. There goes your last shred of evidence, Sherlock Holmes. But you have the truth at last, and you can die with the knowledge that I killed you. You knew too much about how Victor Savage died, so I sent you to join him. I think I'll sit here and watch you go. You haven't long now.
The gas. Turn up the gas, Smith. Please.
Oh. The shadows begin to fall, do they? Very well. The gas, eh? All the better to see you by. Is there any other little service that I can do for you, my friend?
Yes, if you'd be so good. Just give me your hand. Your hand.
Your hand. Ah, thank you.
What's the meaning of this?
I wouldn't struggle if I were you, Mr. Culverton Smith. These handcuffs are quite strong enough to hold you.
You can stand.
Ah, my pipe.
You're perfectly well.
The best way of acting a part, of course, is to be it, Smith. I give you my word that for the last 3 days, I've tasted neither food nor drink, but really it's the lack of tobacco that I found most irksome.
Holmes, I'll murder you.
You almost did, my friend. But wait, there's someone coming in I think will be delighted to make your acquaintance. Ah, good evening, Inspector Morton. There's your man.
Thank you, Mr. Holmes. We've been waiting in the street, as you told us to in your message.
Yeah, and cold enough, too, I'd fancy, on a night like this. To save a poor invalid trouble, Inspector, Mr. Smith was so very good as to give you our signal himself by turning up the gas.
Before heaven, this is an outrage. I'll not stand for such a trick.
One trick's as good as another, Mr. Smith. Hmm? Inspector Morton is from the yard, and the sergeant, well, you better hold out your hands and go quietly.
Come, sir. I arrest you on the charge of the murder of one Victor Savage.
And the attempted murder of one Sherlock Holmes. Oh, by the way, Morton, the prisoner, has a small box in his left-hand coat pocket, which I think it'd be just as well to remove.
Yes,
but handle it gingerly, if you please. Let me pass you the sugar tongs. There, that's it. Yeah, here, on the table. Thank you so much.
A nice trap, Holmes. Or so you fancy. But you've no witness. And whatever was said in this room was only between ourselves. And my word is just as good as yours.
Archie!
Oh, I beg your pardon.
Good heavens! My dear Watson, where are you? Bless you. Oh, yes, behind the bed. I owe you a thousand apologies.
So I should think, Holmes, I've never been so uncomfortable in all my life.
Oh, my poor dear fellow. I need hardly introduce you to Mr. Culverton Smith, who I am sure will now accept his defeat most gracefully, now that he sees that you were a witness to his confession.
Your servant, Mr. Smith.
Confound you, Sherlock Holmes.
Thank you. Take him away, Inspector. We can make all formal arrangements later. In the meantime, Watson, perhaps you'd be good enough to pour me out a glass of brandy.
Well, take his other arm, Sergeant. Much obliged to you, Mr. Holmes. You've done it again. Good night, sir. And Dr. Watson.
Good night, Morton.
Good night.
After you, Mr. Smith.
Well, there you are then, Holmes. Here's your brandy.
Thank you.
And I should prescribe a couple of biscuits for an empty stomach, I think.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I never needed this more.
I never forgive you, Holmes. You know that, of course.
Oh, come, Watson.
No, never.
It was essential now to convince Mrs. Hudson that I was a dying man so that she could convince you and you could convince our friend Mr. Culverton Smith.
Yes, but you should have
told me. Don't be offended, Watson. It was really a compliment, you know.
Compliment?
Well, among your many talents, dissimulation finds no place, old friend. And you could never have impressed Smith with the urgency of it all if you hadn't really believed it yourself.
But your whole appearance, your ghastly face and those eyes.
3 days of absolute fast hardly improve one's beauty, Watson. And for the rest, well, a smear of Vaseline on the forehead, a little belladonna in the eyes, a touch of rouge on the cheekbones, and these crusts of beeswax around the lips. A very satisfying effect may be produced, I think. Malingering is a subject I've often thought of for a monograph.
Yeah. And a little occasional talk about half-crowns or oysters, for instance, and behold, a case of tragic delirium.
Exactly.
Yes, but why did you never let me near you if there wasn't any infection after all? Now, that was the unkindest cut, Holmes, it truly was. You said you'd no confidence in me.
I too much, my dear Watson.
What?
Well, do you imagine I'd have no respect for your medical ability? Could I imagine for a moment that your astute judgment would pass a dying man who had no rise of pulse or temperature? My dear fellow.
Well, if you put it that way...
Of course I do. How else? At 4 yards I could deceive you, not a foot nearer. And who then would have brought Mr. Smith within my grasp?
Ah, yes. Yes, but the little box, eh? That harmless-looking little ivory box. What of that?
No, Watson, don't touch it, not even now. Can't you see the way the little sharp infected spring shoots out like a viper's tooth when you look down at it sideways? Hmm?
He killed his nephew with that device. The boy stood between Smith and his inheritance. He died horribly.
Oh, still, I find it hard to forgive you, you know. You worried Mrs. Hudson and me inconsiderably.
Ah, poor Mrs. Hudson. I'll make it up to her. But you must admit, it was the work of a true artist. You must permit me my methods. Watson, you of all people.
Oh, Holmes.
Come, let me soothe your savage breast. And then, perhaps, when I've dressed, something solid and nutritious at that little chop house of ours in the Strand would not, I fancy, be out of place. I confess that dying is quite one of the hungriest hobbies I've ever taken up.
The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes, based on the original stories of Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, have been dramatized anew with original music composed by Sidney Torch. Sir Ralph Richardson played the part of Dr. Watson, and Sir John Gielgud that of Sherlock Holmes. The program was produced by Harry Allen Towers.
Sherlock Holmes on Tuned to Yesterday from NBC, heard on February 13th, 1955. That brings to a close this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. It's been a pleasure.